Salutations, greetings, and hello. My name is Stephen Briggs. I am chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal. This is episode number 130, Lessons from Losing My Mom. As the title implies, my mother recently passed away a couple of weeks ago. It was fairly sudden over the course of a few days. It was very unexpected and heartbreaking. I won't lie. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it just feels okay and things are fine. Things aren't fine. There's an emptiness. There's a piece that's missing. And it's tough. I am definitely my mother's son in a lot of ways. And so... It has taken me some time to digest all of that, I think. But I do want to share with you some thoughts regarding this, because as we head into the holiday season, this is normally the time of year where I start talking with people about making sure, since you're seeing family, to have estate planning documents and stuff like that kind of gathered around. And I have a few more thoughts on this, but, I definitely want to dig into this topic because with it being a bit fresh, because there are definitely some aspects of this experience I can absolutely confirm. And I also think there are some other added thoughts and ideas as someone that is now living through this process of not just losing a loved one, but losing a parent. And frankly, losing a parent fairly young. My mom was 68 when she passed away. What that sort of does or means or how to think about things a little bit. So first, I do want to talk about the estate planning document side of things. One thing that did help our family significantly was that years in advance, and we're probably talking 5-6 years ago, so my parents were in their early 60s, I asked them, you know, and prodded them and made sure that they had estate planning documents in order. And that meant not only with respect to property, but it all, really, I think more important is with respect to who's making healthcare decisions. And ultimately, the third element of that would be what happens, how do they want to be treated in terms of when they go? And so while it's been a very challenging last couple of weeks emotionally, about 2.5 weeks from when mom was put in the hospital at this point, about almost 2 weeks since she's passed. We're not arguing about what's happening with respect to various accounts and so on, although my dad is still alive, so most of this just defaults to him. But it's been, challenging, but we've had at least a playbook for this is the process for how things need to get done in terms of paperwork, in terms of what accounts are where. The decision-making process with respect to, end-of-life care and there's no argument. There's been no infighting. The family's been we've been communicating every day and able to talk through stuff, but there's no argument in terms of what intentions mom had in any way, shape, or form. This also includes, like I said, it also means how does mom want her remains treated, and what sort of, you know, celebration or event or funeral or what have you, does your loved one want? In my mother's case, she didn't want a funeral at all, but she said, "Stephen, I want you to throw a party. About a month after I pass away, I want you to throw a big party." And so my mother is a huge fan of science fiction, fantasy, Tolkien. She got me my first Dungeons & Dragons set when I was 9 years old. But she really set me on a course to enjoy games and science fiction and fantasy. She was a huge supporter, both my brother and I, when it came to our education. And so... You know, in terms of this, I knew that you know, in terms of the party she would want, I have styled it akin to what happened at the beginning of Lord of the Rings when Bilbo had his 11-1st birthday party, where he was he did not have a funeral, but he had a farewell party. And it was huge with people and fireworks and drinking and cheer. And then he disappeared, using the One Ring to extricate himself from Bag End forever. And so, not the same mechanism, obviously, but with a very interestingly same sort of suddenness. You know, I think my, you know, it was just fitting from who my mom was. That you know, we throw a farewell party. No vigil, no. We want to share you know, very happy stories, because my mom, I'll tell you, you know, my mom worked very, very hard to help other people and to look out for other people. She was entirely selfless. Anything she could do to help someone else, she did. And it's and so I have a feeling when we have our farewell party in a few weeks, I'll be interested to see who shows up. But I think she touched a lot more people than even necessarily some of my family members realize. So, but in any case, having all of that codified, documented, and so forth, it leaves, you know, at that point, no room for confusion or argument or, you know, debate in any way. And I think that that's very needed at a time where people really need to focus on healing and trying their best to digest emotions and hopefully remember their loved one in the best light, you know, possible. Apart from that, some other things that I want to put out there that aren't necessarily as estate planning related. One more thing I will add is that if you're looking at estate planning, obviously working with an estate planning attorney to build those documents makes a great deal of sense, working with someone good and reputable on that. But the other thing I would also recommend is if you're looking at going, I don't know if we can afford or necessarily can start with that, or maybe you feel a little bit squeamish about like discussing these sorts of details, there is an amazing organization that produces a document called Five Wishes. And what Five Wishes does, it's basically you can have a physical or an online packet from them. And what it does is it starts to guide the discussion process regarding building, basically expressing what you want to see happen with your stuff. In more than 40 states, it's actually a legally binding document if you have it properly witnessed. So it can serve for many people actually as the estate planning document. That wouldn't be my recommendation, though. My recommendation would be to fill the thing out, get something on paper, and then go to an estate planning attorney and have it fully documented and so forth. And the value for that is twofold. One, making sure you're complying with state laws, which are different from state to state with respect to how an estate is treated. And so it's important that your legalese not only reflects wishes, but is actually legally enforceable should these things be put to the test. I will say in my mom's healthcare situation, these things were kind of put to the test. My dad made sure that powers of attorney were very readily available for the healthcare staff because there were several teams of healthcare officials, healthcare workers, trying to evaluate and assess if there was anything they could do for my mother. And they all had their designs and I think thoughts on what should happen, which may or may not have coincided with what my mom wanted. And the thing is, if you don't have these documents in play, it is possible for someone to point to their Hippocratic Oath or what they feel their sense of duty is in the situation and do things that your family may or may not want with respect to their treatment. And so it's very challenging, obviously, to have to face up to this stuff, period. But even more so when the people that you would think would listen to you and so on, the problem is that they also have a legal mandate and their own, you know, everyone has their own feelings on what they feel their sense of duty is with respect to healthcare and so forth. And those what they feel and what your family member or how you may feel about how you want things handled may be quite different. So having a document that is legally fully enforced that says this person or these people are the ones responsible for making those calls, not you, is pretty important if you want someone other than whoever the person is that, that's treating you to make those types of decisions, or if you have specific decisions of your own, to make sure they actually listen to those and take those into consideration. And there's good research to show that if you have those documents in play, there is a high likelihood that they actually get followed. And so to that end, I just encourage making sure that that takes place in some form. And that, like I said, Five Wishes is a terrific nonprofit. In fact, it's, I believe in this so much. Here is what I'm willing to do for you. If you would like to get started on this and would like a copy of the Five Wishes document from that nonprofit, you send me an email, Steven, S-T-E-V-E-N, @briggswealth.com. I will send you a copy at no charge to you. I will send you a copy at no charge to you. That's my offer. Very easy. I'm happy to chuck a couple dollars at their organization if it will help you clarify this stuff and make it easier for you to do these things and make sure that documentation's in place so you're not having to face up against not only probably one of the greatest challenges that hits anyone in their life, which is the threat or loss of a loved one, but that you've had an opportunity to codify all this and protect yourselves in a way. So with that said, apart from the estate planning documents, I want to bring up a few other points that are things that you may want to consider having at the ready, not because you're fearful on any given day, but that you're just prepared for whenever this is. Because I'll tell you, I didn't expect this to happen this year or next year or the year after. 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, maybe. But I really did not, have any idea or inkling that this could be coming as soon as it did. And, I had even talked to my mother as late as the day before she went into the hospital about coming home the following week. And she seemed optimistic and excited and was telling my dad as much. And I never got to see Mom after that conversation on the phone. I didn't get to see her before she passed. And, I'm not horribly regretful about that. My mom and I talked pretty regularly and pretty often. But that said, you just don't know. You just don't know. So you have to be thinking and preparing as though, hey, this could happen at any time. And that's a very realistic view. Some thoughts. Consider having someone in mind if you're thinking about like a counselor or a therapist. I think it's important to talk to people about this. And your family and friends can only go so far because they care about you. They love you. They'll humor you to a degree. But it's tough on them too. And they've got their own lives and they've got their own things and they'll tell you it's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. It's tough to listen to someone day in and out, week in and out, who's sad, who's tired, who's frustrated, who's confused, who feels just, whether that's existential dread or just simply really missing that loved one that's no longer there. To hear that day in and day out, it's tough. It's tough to be on the other end of that. And I see that in my profession too, and I guess that helps me be a tad more level-headed about it, but I'm going to tell you, it doesn't change my feelings one iota. I hurt. I miss my mom. It's tough. But I also am, there's a degree of pragmatism that exists, but it's hard to be pragmatic when you're hurt. It's hard to be pragmatic when you're hurt. So it's important to have people you can talk to. And these are people that are literally professionals at listening to people. And it's not that they're going to come up with some whiz-bang thing that's going to make you feel better. No. And the idea is not to get drugged up either. No. The point is simply having someone you can express this with and make sure that you are healing in a healthy way can be a really big difference. And it can take a lot of pressure, like I said, off of family and friends who certainly want to help. But again, there's just a bandwidth limit to this. So having someone in your corner that isn't family and friend can be help you stay objective and help you in that healing process. Next thing I'll say is make sure you plan to take time off. I know a number of businesses, employers offer, you know, maybe 5 days for the passing of a parent. And I'm going to tell you, research shows that's not enough time. That's not enough time. And I can tell you from experience, as someone who owns a business and jumped back in after just a few days, it wasn't enough time. Research shows that, especially for the death of a parent, 20 days. And a lot of businesses are moving more toward that number. They're getting closer. Some of them already have, like Facebook, for example, Meta, has a 20-day bereavement policy for the death of a parent. And I'm glad for that. That's a good policy. We at our firm don't have any codified policy because we run on unlimited vacation sick time. But I would encourage my employees to take several weeks off. I can tell you that. Like, I would just straight up encourage it. Because there's a lot to deal with. There's a lot to emotionally digest. There's a lot logistically, especially if you're having to deal with account transferings and all that stuff, the legal. It takes days to get through that paperwork. And it's emotional. So, I mean, bluntly, plan to take some time off. It's okay. The world will go on. And if you're feeling some pressure and pushback, I think it says something about values a little bit. And you kind of decide how you feel about a business that does not value the ability for its employees to grieve in a reasonable way. And taking, like I said, 20 days is about 3 weeks off. We're not talking, that's not an insane amount of time. Will it be inconvenient for the employer? Sure. Anytime people take time off, it can be inconvenient. But yeah, we got to take care of human beings. We got to take care of each other. Plan to take some time off. If it's someone that you know is older, if you're worried about a parent, let's say, or a grandparent or what have you, frankly, I really wish that I had written my mom's obituary a little bit in advance. Because I'll tell you, as tough as it might be to think like that when they're alive, oh my Lord, is it difficult to write that when they're not. Easily, one of the most difficult write-ups I have ever had was sitting there, you know, a day, 2 days after my mom has passed away and being asked to write the rough draft of an obituary, trying to come up with dates, trying to come up with locations, trying to talk about who that person is. And it's not to say you wouldn't add thoughts or ideas after they pass. You can go through and editorialize, but my goodness, is it difficult to write about someone like that when they've passed versus celebrating someone when they're alive and talking about their achievements or, you know, how they touch people or whatever it is. I'll tell you, I was a complete mess after finishing that obit. And I just sat there and went, oh, we're not doing that twice. So I'm going to work on dad's here not too much longer. I'm sure he'll be thrilled. But point being is that it's just such an emotional process. And it's not to say, like I said, not to feel emotions, but it is to say anything you can do to take a little bit of the load off yourself when this stuff hits, man, do it if you can. I'm not saying, again, go through your entire friends list and start writing up death notices, but, when parents are aging, you know when grandparents are aging and so on, you can cross a few, especially if you know you're going to be responsible or maybe asked to contribute on a couple of these. I'll tell you, the facts and details gets really, difficult too, because then you're thinking about, you know, again, things like, if it's a husband and, husband and wife, or what have you, when did you get married to each other or what have you? God, get that stuff down on paper. Don't be hunting for for information like that, or what city were they born in, or what have you. Also, make sure if you are going to write that, put it in a secure place so that you're not looking at any sort of a hack as a result. I just, as I was talking about that, I'm thinking, yeah, where were you born? I'm like, well, that's a password recovery question, isn't it? Anywho, yeah, but I think writing that stuff out can be, can take some pressure off of you when the time does eventually come. The last thing I'm going to say is this. As best as one can, try to live in such a way where knowing that this can happen at any time, and you may or may not get a chance to say what you want to say in those final moments or be there at the whatever. Because, I mean, it's not just, you know, people who die of sickness, but also people, I mean, car crashes happen every day. Various accidents happen every single day that are fatal and sudden. And so what I would say is make sure that you're living in such a way where you're not going to regret. You know, my mom and I talked, like I said, once or twice a week for a period of time. You know, I always said, I love you, you know, to mom at the end of every phone call, and she said it back to me. And I'll tell you, in the back of my mind a little bit, I always did that because, you know, you just don't know. You just don't know. And so to that end, as I'm sitting here today, you say, what would you have done differently, or do you have any regrets or whatever? I don't. I really don't. I mean, there are some things that could have happened differently that, sure, I would have loved to have happened differently. But in terms of, you know, my communication, my terms of how close I was to my mom and all the cool things I got to share and do and so forth, and she wanted to see, and I didn't leave anything on the table there in that regard. I think there were a few more things I wish I could have experienced with my mom. Maybe I could have been a little more aggressive about making those things happen. But mom wasn't necessarily interested in making those things happen, and that's okay, you know? And there's another final phrase, is that at the end of the day, what's happened's happened. Like, I can't go back in time and change any of that. That's it. So I'd encourage you to live intentionally, and to live with, you know, in such a way that if things were to cut off today and you were to never see that person again, would you be okay? I mean, you wouldn't feel okay about it, but would you be satisfied that you got to experience what you wanted to experience with them? That you got to share with them what you wanted to share with them? I mean, my mom has no doubt, I'm sure, how I felt about her. And how much respect and love and admiration I have for her. I know that was entirely and always there. And so, yeah, I think that, yeah, I look back on this and I'm like, you know, no, there isn't anything there I regret, you know, and I'm glad I treated it that way. And so I just would say I'd encourage you to, you know, consider a similar line when it comes to when you have the opportunity to spend time with people or go on a trip or, you know, and yeah, it might be a little financially inconvenient. You can do these things, by the way, and not spend all the dollars on earth. Let's just get the financial part back in here for a second. There's some balance to this. But like recently, I was discussing with a client, them considering a trip, you know, going in and doing a family trip with parents and grandparents. And they said, well, maybe next year. I said, well, if everyone's healthy and you can do it next year, do it. And they kind of looked at me a little bit. And I said, you know, because you don't know the clock everyone's on. And taking that clock for granted is a good way to put yourself in a position where you're going to be in the regret camp. If only I had done that sooner. I think that's what it's fueled a lot of what's happened this past year, a resurgence in travel and so forth post-COVID, comes from that sense of wanting to make up for lost time. I mean, that's not just some, you know, like marketing-ism or what have you. I mean, there's a very real sense that people lost years in that. You know, if family was far away or had some health issues or what have you. So to that end, if you have an opportunity, whether that's with your friends, whether that's with a significant other, whether that's with family, whoever that might be, if there are things that you want to experience or do, you know, there's obviously a degree of reason of, you know, can we afford $15,000 trip with no retirement savings? No. But you could probably plan something smaller and still get a lot of the same benefits out of it, maybe something more local or regional, and get a lot of the benefit out of it. Because I think if you boil it down, it's not about going to some grandiose place. It's about being together and sharing something together and sharing something special together. And that doesn't matter if that's 500 miles away or 5,000 miles away. It really doesn't make that much of a difference if you think about it. It's about being together. It's about sharing that experience. And it's about, you know, looking, you know, being able to you know, like I said, to live intentionally and to live without regret. And so I guess that's where I'll close this episode. No theme song, no whatever, you know, it's tough to lose a loved one, period. It's tougher still to lose a parent. And, and I'll say, as someone who, you know, now, you know, mom gone at 68, it feels way too soon, but I'm sure that's pretty much the sentiment of, like, at least half to two thirds of people, is that this stuff hits very suddenly, and sooner than they're remotely prepared for. You know, I'll just say that, like I said, my mom, you know, and I'll just speak on my mom here real quick. So if you're looking for more content, you've hit the end here. You can go ahead and stop. But I want to talk about my mom for a minute. My mom is one of the smartest people I've ever met. And you would never know it listening to her. Like, in terms of, like, you'd say, well, did she sound? No, listen. She didn't make anyone feel uncomfortable. She didn't feel like she had to really show how smart she was. But if you observe carefully, if you watched whether it was how she would play a board game or a video game, or the way she would have a sarcastic or quick little one-liner in there to dagger especially my dad, who walked right into him more often than not. But always with a sense of my mom was always very realistic, very with just a strong sense of, trying to help people and doing what's right, and being supportive and encouraging. She loved kids. She worked in the public schools for basically two decades and volunteered even before that with my brother and I in school. But my mom, like I said, bright as can be, but was always looking out for others. And to just the nth degree, and raised two very, raised two good sons who are hopefully making a difference and helping the world be better and do better. My brother works as a software engineer for a company that basically is responsible for when disaster hits, in terms like an earthquake or a tsunami or a tornado or whatever. Their company pushes that information out onto your mobile devices to make sure that you're safe, that you go find cover, seek shelter, that whole thing. That's what he does. And then obviously I operate this firm with the idea of helping people improve themselves financially and live healthier, better lives. In our own ways, my brother and I are both Eagle Scouts. She was supportive of scouting, when their platform went to poop I think really targeted and went after people. It was a much healthier environment for the Boy Scouts of America, but my mom was an ardent supporter, not of any of the religious component, but of the skill building, the achievement, the community and desire to, simply the desire among kids and the community we lived in to help other people. And that's how we were, more or what our troop was focused on and did, was helping people. And that was it. And it was pretty darn good. Taking care of my brother and I, but also taking care of our friends and other scouts and other people. Like, there just wasn't anything mom wouldn't do, and never with judgment. Never judgmental. And that's, in today's day and age where judgment is constantly being thrown left and right, my mom is someone that anyone could go to with anything, and she would be there with a helping hand no matter what. And so truly a loss to the world, a loss for our family, certainly. But also at the same time, someone that I hope I continue to develop and be, at least in part an image. Like I said, I'm my mother's son in a lot of ways, and they're all good ones. And so I hope that, continuing to work hard and help people, I can continue my mother's legacy in that way of trying to hopefully be humble and support other people and help people live their best version of them, be the best version of themselves and live their best life as a result of it. So with that, I want to thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Money is Personal. If you want to catch any of our episodes, please make sure to check us out, BriggsWealth.com. You can find us on your favorite podcasts, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. Thank you so much. Have a great week. Be safe. Be well. Hug your loved ones. And make sure you're living a life without regrets. And again, if you want that estate planning tool, 5 wishes, email me, Steven, Steven, at BriggsWealth.com. I will get a copy over to you at no charge to you. So, like I said, have a good week. Be well. And I'll catch you with a fresh episode next week. Take care, everybody.